Marco Werman, and this is The World. Glad you're with us. If you've ever been to Iceland, you know it looks like a cold moonscape from the air. It's also got a very small population for its size. Maybe that small population is what led Iceland's government to say it's only willing to accept 50 Syrian refugees over the next 2 years. Sounds about as welcoming as the landscape. Some in Iceland call the cap on refugees shameful. They say they'd hope for a different sort of response if they were in need.
We could also become refugees tomorrow or in 10 years or 100 years, and then we would definitely want other countries to act out and help us immediately.
That's Bryndis Björgvinsdóttir in Reykjavik. She created the Facebook page Syria is Calling a few days ago. It challenges Iceland's decision to cap the refugee number at 50, and it's attracted the support of some 10,000 Facebook users. Many of them are offering food and shelter for Syrian refugees.
50 people is not even a good wedding party. So what we did was to make this Facebook event where people offer houses, food, clothes, and so on. And the idea is to show we can raise that number from 50 to 100, 500, even 1,000.
Does the government not understand what the people want there?
Maybe they understand now. I made this Facebook event 48 hours ago, and it was on telly and the newspapers. They were all talking about this. So now the government can feel the pressure, and they know people are more interested. So hopefully, you know, we can talk and do something finally.
And I gather the Icelanders are making themselves known. They've written open letters to the Minister of Social Affairs offering to help refugees. And I gather others are posting on the Facebook page Syria is Calling. Give us some examples of what's on that page.
There's like this one guy who has a whole house with 11 beds. And he said, you know, refugees can have this house for 1 year. People are just, they really want to do something. And they are just looking around and trying to figure out what they can offer. This is also a question about give and take. And Icelanders just need to do more and participate more.
There are also some really hateful comments like, tell us the date when you'll leave Islam. We can talk about immigration then. In Germany, you may know there are neo-Nazis who are really upset with the arrival of migrants, and they burned down shelters. Are you worried about what could happen in Iceland?
No, not really. I'm worried about the neo-Nazis, though.
Are you worried about neo-Nazis in Iceland?
I haven't seen them around, thankfully. But I'm worried about what is happening in Europe, where you can see those extreme right-wing politics grow bigger and bigger.
Iceland never had any colonial history in the Mideast or Africa. Where does this impulse come from?
Well, we were colony ourselves. That we were like a part of Denmark.
Mm.
I don't think we are being generous, really. 50 is such a low number, and just raising 50 to 100 or 500 is not really being generous. It's just like basic thing to do. I mean, comparing to Germany, what they are doing, that is really awesome.
Bryndis, what are you offering the refugees? Are you opening up your home for any of them?
No, I live with my parents, so that's enough for them. The story of this website is my Facebook friend. He has a big house, and he said he has space for 5 Syrian refugees. So I said, okay, they can live with you, and I will pay for their flight tickets. And then we said, so we can raise the number from 50 to 55.
Wow, that's very generous of you to pay for all those plane tickets.
I don't think it's that much for 5 lives.
Bryndis Björgvinsdóttir in Reykjavik, Iceland there. She's a founder of the Facebook page Syria is Calling. Meantime, a completely different reality on the Greek island of Lesbos. Just this past weekend, 4,000 refugees landed there. Just this past weekend. And when the scale is that large and that fast, things are likely to get complicated. Kirk Day of the International Rescue Committee is on the island and has been witnessing all of this. We reached him earlier by phone.
I have to admit, it's actually almost near complete chaos. We're looking at what we consider to be a perfect storm in terms of the refugee crisis. We're now seeing upwards of 2,000 to 3,000 refugees every single day for this island. And just to give you some perspective, the town of Mytilene only has a population of 30,000. So one out of every 4 or even more people that you see are refugees. People are sleeping rough on sidewalks, alleyways, parks. It's a mind-boggling scene.
What are they eating?
Well, this raises an interesting point because many of the people knowing what the journey has in store for them, have brought money. So, for example, people have had to pay at least 1,000 euros each to make the treacherous journey from Turkey across the Aegean into Lesbos. So they do have money. And so while some people would describe these people as a burden or a scourge, I do have to admit for some local businesses, this may be the best thing that's ever happened to them.
All right. That's the local businesses. What about residents? How are they dealing with this?
I mean, I think, to be honest, I've been doing this business for about 20 years in, you know, almost every refugee or other crisis that you can imagine. And I cannot remember a place that has been so characterized by selfless volunteerism and commitment by local community groups. However, at the other end of the spectrum, you have people that are adherents to far-right political parties, for example, the Golden Dawn, who are using this situation to stoke up tensions for their own political gain with upcoming elections. Having said that, somewhere in the middle are the majority of local residents who are, I would say, fatigued by the problem. Most people think that the problem's only been going on this year, but the fact is, on the island of Lesbos and other neighboring Greek islands, this problem has been going on for at least 5 years, and local communities, by and large, have had to respond without any international assistance, and they don't see any end in sight.
Do you think European governments are ready to handle this crisis and really solve it?
Well, I mean, I think this is the prospect Europe is facing. Whether they're ready or not, these people are coming. While many people somehow feel offended that refugees would want to seek safety in their countries, I can't think of a higher compliment. When you talk to Syrians in particular, they love their country and they don't want to necessarily leave. But they said there was simply no way that they and their families could live safely in their homes.
I'm just curious, Kirk, you said you've been 20 years in this humanitarian business. IRC works in places like Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria where there are live wars and dealing with those refugees. What's it like for you to see Europe here as a stage of this refugee crisis?
I have to say I never thought I'd be responding to a humanitarian crisis in Greece, let alone in Europe. I can tell you that people are going to roll their eyes and think it can't be that bad. And I did the same thing when I first thought about having to respond here. And then I arrived and I went into the main refugee camp, which is Karadape, and I was astonished to find at least 2,000 people living there in a completely unmanaged camp with toilets that were so frankly disgusting and inoperable that people had taken to defecating in the woods, sleeping in the open without appropriate shelter or access to clean water. And I had to step back and recalibrate and think, when is the last time I've been in a situation this bad? And my answer was, in 1997, when I was on the front lines of what was the civil war in Zaire.
Kirk Days with the International Rescue Committee, speaking with me from Mytilene in Lesbos in Greece. Kirk, thank you very much.
My pleasure.